You're listening to the Foul Ball Area podcast with Matthew Atkins, now available on Spotify, SoundCloud, Podbean, and Apple Podcasts. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Foul Ball Area podcast. I'm Matthew Atkins. Joining me again today is Trey Lyle, all the way out in Kansas, and we've got a very special guest coming on the podcast today. Joining us from Richlands, Virginia, is the one and only Brady Hess. Brady, thanks for hopping on today.
Hey, man, always a pleasure to see you guys, even if it is over Zoom. Been a while, but looking forward to catching back up and talking a little bit about baseball.
Yeah, it has been a while. I think, sorry, Trey, I think last time I saw you was actually graduation. I ran into you on campus right before I was getting ready to walk.
I think that's true. I think that is.
Yeah, been about a year.
Yeah, man. Time goes by fast, and always good to get back to Blacksburg, and especially after everything that's going on right now, I'm looking forward to getting back there pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm right with you guys. I think that was also last time I saw you with graduation, obviously. Matt and I graduating together. I can't believe it's almost been a year. And then I quickly, a couple months later, I'm moving out to the Midwest. So good to see you as always. Glad you're healthy, Brady. And excited for another episode of the podcast. Kind of a difficult subject to talk about at the beginning, but should be you have some great insight for us.
Yeah, just on Wednesday, we talked a little bit about the minor league baseball plan with Major League Baseball to cut around 40 teams, get the minor leagues down to 120 teams. And one of those teams that's going to be cut likely is the Bluefield Blue Jays. And Brady, you spent 2 years working in Bluefield. What was your reaction? I mean, this plan came out, I think, in October. What was your reaction when this plan initially was released back then?
So I guess it's just one of kind of shock or, just heartbreak initially, because you see that report come out in October, and you're always kind of wondering in the Appy League a lot, some year to year, whether as time has went on, whether the professional club is going to renew their contract with the club in said town, whether it's in Bluefield, Princeton, wherever. If you look back when we were in middle school, high school, even Pulaski lost their team for a little while, and now they've come back pretty strong to the point that they're not going to be one of the teams cut out of all of this. As everybody else in their league, it will be. But it was just one of kind of shock, I guess, because professional baseball, and I'll speak specifically to Bluefield more so than any of the others, has been such a staple in the community for such a long time. You go back all the way to the 20s and 30s when the coal corporations around here had baseball teams, and it kind of grew off that. You had the Bluefield Blue Grays, crazily enough, and then you had the Braves were here for a hot minute, and then the Orioles were here forever in Bluefield, had the longest running relationship in minor league baseball until they split ways, and then the Blue Jays came here. So it's just always been a staple. It was always something that was very exciting to go to during the summer. I walked into Bowen Field many times and thought it was just as important or as extravagant as Fenway Park or Wrigley Field, just because, you know, when you're 5, 6, 7 years old, you're developing a love for the game, and you don't realize that although these guys are pro ball players and it's a long way to get to the bigs, they've got the chance. And those guys, in your eyes, having that chance, they were heroes. I've got so many team sets of Bluefield Orioles cards just autographed through the years, and have kept up with some of those guys. And when I got the opportunity to work for the Blue Jays, it was honestly kind of like a dream come true. And the first time that I ever, I guess, got my feet wet with the Blue Jays was Bailey Angle, who we also went to Tech with. He was the play-by-play broadcaster there. Opening night in 2016, he calls me up that morning and he said, man, the PA guy is going to dip out. He can't be here today. He can't be here till next week. We've got the home opener tonight, and if you can't come, if I can't find somebody to do PA, I'm not going to be able to broadcast. I'm going to have to be on the PA. And I said, well, don't hold your breath. I'll be up there real soon. And I was able to do that for two nights in the opening of 2016. And fortunately enough, got to call Vlad Jr.'s first big league home run over the PA there at Bowen. And then the next 2 years, I was on full time as the PA guy. So it was really a dream come true, and especially something that was important in my childhood, getting to do that. It was really cool.
Brady, you kind of touched on it at the end, and we kind of mentioned it in the last episode. That's why we kind of brought you on here, because of your unique perspective. But one unique part I like about minor league baseball is you see the future of baseball, and you kind of can say, like, oh, I saw this guy play when. Like, for me, I got to see Brandon Crawford play minor league baseball and with the Flying Squirrels in Richmond, and he was an all-star. And you kind of saw key pieces of these Giants' runs to a World Series play minor league baseball in like the last little run in the league. But another thing was you got to see Vlad Jr. And so, like, one of the up and coming stars in baseball. Just talk about, like, seeing him. Obviously this is rookie ball, so this is his first real experience, I think, in America, really. I mean, obviously with his dad, but like playing professional baseball in America.
I mean, it's cool, and I can talk on that perspective of Vlad Jr. That was really awesome to get to see him, and you know, the hype train behind him, his dad's in the stands, and he hits that home run, I think it was opening night, so that was really cool. And he has since lived up to the hype. I mean, he broke the home run derby record for home runs this past year, so it's went by pretty quick. But I mean, you think about it, and obviously all three of us weren't even thoughts when these guys were coming through places like Bluefield, but Cal Ripken Jr. got his start in Bluefield. Eddie Murray got his start in Bluefield back in the 70s. And, you know, guys later on in the 90s, Jerry Harrison Jr., Jim Johnson, guys like that. Don Baylor got his gig in Bluefield, was the AL MVP in 79. Don Buford was the manager. I remember Don Buford, he played at Bluefield. Then he ended up was the manager while I was a kid. I think that's really the first manager I can remember in Bluefield. And Aaron Sanchez, in 2016, led the AL and ERA. He started in Bluefield. But it's like I said, I mentioned earlier, one guy who I remember as a kid that got all the way to Baltimore was this guy named I'm going to butcher it now because I'm talking about it. He was a pitcher. Daniel, I want to say Sanchez maybe. I'm not for sure. Daniel something. I hate that I'm forgetting that. But anyway, he made it to the bigs, and I've got an autographed rookie league card of him. And then a few years later, he's on the front cover of the Bluefield Orioles programs because there was just a seasonal program. And you're just like, wow, I see this guy a couple years ago here, and now he's in the bigs. So it's really cool because you don't know at that point who's going to make it. I mean, you've got an idea who your really good ball players are, like Vlad Jr. I mean, it was it's just a really – I don't know if humbling's the correct word, but it's humbling to see these guys start in Bluefield, West Virginia, Bluefield, Virginia, and work their way all the way up to the bigs. And right then and there, you just never know. So getting to see them climb the ladder and ultimately get to Toronto, that was a really cool thing to see.
It is actually a really impressive list of guys that have started in Bluefield. I mean, the guys you mentioned, like Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray, but some of the younger guys, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Kevin Pillar, Noah Syndergaard actually started his career in the Blue Jays organization, so he was in Bluefield. So really impressive list of guys that had come out of there. All three of us have spent some time in minor league baseball. Trey, you worked for the Flying Squirrels for a summer, like you said, in the Eastern League, and the Eastern League actually has two teams that might be cut with this plan going forward. But Brady and I have spent time in the Appalachian League. I spent a summer in Pulaski in 2016. So, I mean, I know how important baseball is to these towns in the Appalachian League, like Pulaski and Bluefield and Princeton and Danville and Bristol. I mean, these small towns, it's a big part of their culture, of their economy, and they're going to be hurting if those teams are gone for the summer.
And you know, something I'll just add on that is the region of Appalachia is already in a funk. I mean, you talk about the economy taking another hit. I mean, what else more of a hit can you take to a region? I mean, you saw the decline of use for coal mines over the years, and when there's not been coal in Appalachia, the people leave because there's not a second industry to keep you there. Well, you look, if baseball leaves, well, there's another economic engine. whether you're in Bluefield, whether you're in Princeton, Bristol, Johnson City, Kingsport, Elizabethan, those are dollars that's not coming into the economy. It's not whether you go to the burger bar on State Street in Bristol, or whether you go to the rail yard in Bluefield, or whether you go to real good ice cream place in Princeton after the ball game. Those dollars where people may not come down for a game, that you're losing that revenue. I mean, for example, guys like us who like baseball say that we're in Virginia Tech for the summer taking classes, and we're really wanting to mark off some minor league parks. Well, you can get to Pulaski in less than an hour. You can get to Princeton in less than an hour. You can get to Bluefield in an hour. So, I mean, you have a pretty big range of pull. I mean, other than Pulaski and Bristol and Bluefield, the closest minor league team to me would be Salem. And that Salem, and then if you go up toward Charleston, West Virginia, you got the Power, I believe, is in Charleston.
Yeah.
And then the Tennessee Smokies down in Pigeon Forge area. I mean, if you do away with the Appalachian League, you do away with a large thumbprint that your baseball fans are reached. Because, I mean, think about it. As somebody who grew up in Richlands, the closest MLB teams to me are the Braves, the Pirates, the Reds, are the Nationals. And, man, it takes 5 or 6 hours to get there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a lot of people that have grew up very interested in baseball have developed a love for the game by going to these – rookie league games, these Appy League games, because you can get in for cheap, you can eat for cheap. I mean, if you've got a family of four, you can go to a game for the cost, for less than the cost that one person can go to a big league game. It depends where you're sitting, obviously, but I mean, and then the concessions and the souvenirs. I mean, man, it was a big deal to go to the Bluefield Orioles games and go to the Bird's Nest souvenir shop. I think I bought a little batting helmet for every team at one point in the MLB, but that's a big point, and it sucks because when Major League Baseball, it's a billion-dollar industry. They're not hurting for money. They're not going to be hurting with with 20 less teams. But you look in these towns like Bristol and Johnson City and Kingsport and Bluefield and Princeton. I mean, it's just another wide open salt packet into a wound, I would say.
Brady, obviously, we all have unique experiences. I worked on a double A level, and then obviously y'all worked at rookie ball. Just talk about like how unique it was to see the kids as this first experience, because this is completely different than probably any level in a minor league baseball, because they get drafted and then 2 weeks, maybe even a month later, they're in this small town they most kids probably never heard of called Bluefield playing baseball.
Yeah, and they're living in college dorms, Bluefield College campus. I mean, you come from all aspects of life. A lot of these guys can't speak English. So, I mean, it's a culture shock for sure, if there's ever been a culture shock. But it's really cool to see on the minor league, on the rookie league level, because even though you've got these players, that's not their only job at that low level of baseball. I mean, you get acquainted with the players. I mean, some of them you play basketball with at the Dome. I know some people that I worked with. There are a lot of kids that went to Bluefield College, worked for the Bluefield Blue Jays, and after the game sometimes they'd go play 21 or horse or whatever at the gym on campus there. So you get close to these guys, and I mean, when you need the tarp pulled, some of them that aren't dressed that day, they're coming out and they're pulling the tarp with you. And you've got guys out signing autographs. So you really see them on a very personal level. Like, you're having conversations with them. It's not just like now, like a kid goes to Toronto to a game, yells for Vlad Jr. And I'm not singling out Vlad Jr. By any means, but it's more difficult to obtain an autograph from somebody at a big league game than it would be at a rookie league game. I remember I met Tim Beckham, the first overall pick in the draft, maybe 2008, 2009 for the Devil Rays, and I walked right up to him. He signed a baseball. Same could be said with Vlad Jr. Many times I stood over top of the dugout there in Bluefield and just dropped baseballs down with a marker, and they'd throw them back up. And just the accessibility, I'd say, is you get to meet these guys, and you know them on a personal level. It's just not – and a professional level, not just a fan level, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make. And you see their personalities and know what they like. I mean – at Bluefield, there's a boosters club, and there are host families. And although some of these guys don't live with these families, they provide meals for them and stuff. And, I mean, you learn what these guys like to eat and what they like to drink. And, just, I mean, just little stuff like that. I mean, it was just as a very small level you are getting to know these guys.
Yeah, that's true. At the Rookie League, you do have that personal access to them. I think I'd got together with some of the guys in Pulaski one day and played Super Smash Brothers in the clubhouse on an off day. So, I mean, you have those relationships with them that you don't get in the higher levels. If this plan goes forward, the minor league teams would be losing their affiliation with their major league club, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they just cease to exist. They could, you know, reorganize as an independent league. So, do you know what would happen to the Appalachian League if this plan happens? Do you think they'd be able to become their own independent league?
I think that there's been some talks. I'm not really up to date on what would happen. I think it has the potential to happen, because I'd like to think that whether it's an independent league or you want to make it a Woodbat League, a college league, I mean, summer league, whatever. I mean, the facilities are there. I mean, they're professional facilities. So if you're coming in to Bowen Field or Calfee Park, even though I know Pulaski's not getting cut, but Calfee Park or down in Greenville, I mean, these facilities are wonderful. And if you're a college kid getting the opportunity to play in a summer league there, I mean, that's a dream come true, I would think. I think the facilities are there. I think that the monetary support would be there, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how much interest is lost once that the connection with Major League Baseball is there. But I'm telling you what, growing up here, the people, they are connected to sports. They love sports, and hopefully they can still have that connection with sports if this does go through and all signs do point that it will. But it'll be interesting. I think that there could be a run made for some type of baseball still to exist, what the Appalachian League is. And I've had a lot of conversations with Zach Helton, who is a really good friend of mine, and he was the radio voice for the Blue Jays the last few years. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
All right, Brady, any final thoughts or things you really want to say about this before we let you go?
Yeah, I mean, just a couple things. I appreciate you guys always having me on, and really happy to see both of you guys doing well. Really cool to see how both of your careers have taken a step forward, and pretty cool just what we're all doing. I mean, I think we're all out there working hard and scrapping and grinding, and I always admire hard work. But another thing just on this topic is I don't have a voice to MLB, but I understand the reasoning behind this all. But with that being said, I just think it would be a travesty to see it actually go through, and all signs are pointing that it's going through. But whether it's you're losing a portion of a fan base, I mean, I know very well that very little people in Bluefield have ever been to Toronto, but they're interested in the Blue Jays. I think that's a significant loss. And I think that just all the history, I mean, you look back and look at all those greats that have come through all these respective parks. I mean, whether it's Alan Trammell in Bristol, or like we mentioned already, Cal Ripken at Bluefield, and you kind of hesitate to say it right now with his legal troubles, but Josh Hamilton coming through Princeton, and I mean, just all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, you talk about so much history, but when this comes down, you see the final period put down behind that history. And that's always sad to see, but maybe something will happen, and It's just a surreal thing, and a lot of people are going to be heartbroken over it. I've had conversations with guys that work in the league still, and they're just curious what their next move will be. So it'll be a heartbreaking thing the day that baseball leaves the Appalachian League professional baseball, as you guys know what I'm referring to. But I'll tell you what just makes this all worse to me is this daggone COVID-19 wipes out the last season they were going to have.
Yeah, yeah, that's
and,
true.
I mean, we're thinking like, you know, you might know if this is going to be the last hurrah. Well, if you know it's the last hurrah, you're going to do it upright. Well, you don't even get that opportunity because now, I mean, you don't even know if there's going to be an MLB season, let alone a short season league with a shortened draft. But we'll see, man. It just is a sad day, I think, for a lot of baseball lovers that grew up with their first smell of the cut grass and the dirt and their first hint of popcorn and peanuts and Cracker Jacks and everything the songs talk about in the Appalachian League. It's just sad to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. Well, Brady, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate your insight, and it was good to catch up with you.
Always, guys. I appreciate it as always, and I'll see you both soon.
Brady Hess joining the podcast, talking about the minor league baseball contraction plan, where they would cut around 42 minor league teams, get rid of their major league affiliation. It would be a very sad thing, and it does look like it's going to happen. But we'll move on from that now, try to talk about something. Actually, this next topic isn't very happy either. Man, it's been a pretty somber podcast this week. Anyway, the Boston Red Sox had their punishments, and I'm doing air quotes as I say punishments, handed down to them by Major League Baseball yesterday in response to the investigation into the Red Sox cheating allegations. Basically the same thing that the Astros got in trouble for this offseason. The Red Sox were accused of stealing signs using technology, and the punishments that they were handed down.
Again, it wasn't on the scale of the Astros to defend the Red Sox, as I'm trying to. It appears from what I've been read that it wasn't as bad. It was more what most teams do, like what most teams do compared to others. So they kind of, MLB got to a point where it was stuck and had to punish them.
Well, these punishments are a loss of a second round pick in the 2020 draft. They banned the replay operator through the 2021 season, and Alex Cora is banned through the 2020 season. And that's it. Very light punishments. Also, Alex Cora's ban comes as a result of his conduct with the Astros, not with the Red Sox. So they basically pinned the whole thing on the Red Sox replay operator and say that he was a rogue employee and pretty much absolved the team and the front office of any wrongdoing. I think it's pretty weak penalties.
Yeah, but I think if you have to compare it to the Astros, it was going to be weak anyways. They couldn't really do much. I think Major League Baseball put themselves in very much a corner when the Astros situation happened, and so there was not much they could do. I think the only person that was really going to be screwed there was Alex Cora. He got a ban for a year, and that doesn't surprise me. We'll see what happens. Like, I think at this point, I'm ready to move. I'm just tired of it. Like, tired of this kind of thing. Like, it was more of at first. It was like, oh, yeah, they cheat. Like, stealing signs has been part of baseball. I don't like the fact that it was used with technology. But, like, you're getting to the point where it's like, I just don't care anymore. Like, I don't like what the Astros did, and I think obviously the discussion, I think, need to be better around if they should have been stripped of their title. But Red Sox did something on the lesser scale. Yes, they did win a title with it, but we knew it wasn't going to be handled right anyway, so I'm kind of at this point, I don't have any faith really in Rob Manfred and his punishments. Kind of like I do with other commissioners. Like, I think the staple commissioner, I think, for most people is Adam Silver, which if you look at, you compare situations when it's time to punish, Adam Silver is really good at it. I think Roger Goodell is always hit or miss. I think he either goes too hard or too light. And then Rob Manfred just doesn't stay on message, I would say, or just doesn't find the right message to say. Because I think the punishment was fine, but I think saying, oh, the players got immunity when they did, but the PA said they didn't really have to, or, you know, it was just a mess. And so I think it's another situation where it's been a mess from the beginning, and it's kind of like, all right, here's their punishments. They're not great. We knew they weren't going to be great. Let's just keep going.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tough situation, but I don't know. I mean, I don't like that they pinned the whole thing on the replay operator. He can't really do anything if the team is not willing to accept his help. And, you know, the replay operator is not just going to go off on his own and start stealing signs. There has to be someone else that is doing it with him. So I don't like that they pinned the whole thing on the replay operator and suspend him for 2 seasons, but pretty much everybody else is fine. That's my issue with it. And in other news, as we wrap up today's episode of the podcast, talked a little bit about the Chinese Professional Baseball League out in Taiwan. The Korean baseball organization is getting ready to begin its 2020 season, and ESPN, who is desperate for content, decided to reach out to the rights holders of the KBO and inquire about broadcasting the games in the United States. But they wanted to do it for free. They wanted the rights to the KBO for free. I don't know what the hell they were thinking. How are you going to get the rights to an international organization for free?
Doesn't hurt to ask.
Yeah, that's just dumb. Who's going to give that to you for free? You got to pay for it. You got to pay for content. So the rights holders of the KBO said no, and ESPN is still lacking content.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't blame ESPN. I think I see kind of both sides of this. Like, I see why ESPN's asking for free, because they have so much money dedicated to live sports, and if they get it for free, they can terminate the contract, whatever, and they don't have to pay anything, because that's what they would do basically when sports restart. If they made a contract, like, all right, we're going to air this season for $1 million, well, when they terminate the contract, when baseball, hopefully, knock on wood, restarts, they're going to terminate it, and they're out $1 million, so.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's not going to be a long-lasting contract, because they're going to get rid of it as soon as live sports in the U.S. start up again, so it wouldn't be worth it to the KBO. I mean, I guess I do see your point why ESPN wouldn't want to spend all that money, but I don't know. The KBO's got to try to get some money from it also, and so if ESPN's not willing to offer them anything, then yeah, tell them no. Give it to someone else who is willing to pay.
Just going to say, yes, absolutely. I agree with that. I think, yeah, they should make money. I think right now, though, I see ESPN's point. I think we're all starving for live sports content. I mean, you look at these e-races in NASCAR, they're pulling some of the historic ratings. And I think if you look at the Jordan documentary, 6 million people watched. Like, it put a 6.9, I think, was the rating, which is – it shattered the record, which is like 3.2. And so the need for content, if you want to look at supply and demand, is high right now because there's no sports. And so I don't blame ESPN for shooting their shot, yes, necessarily. It's just I think the girl at the table knew her worth very well in the KBO, and they're like, we want some money out of this because the demand is high. And if they have a really good shot to win, because I don't expect ESPN or Fox Sports to deal with China just because of political reasons. Let's just put it that way. So I think the KBO is kind of the only viable option in terms of live baseball.
Yeah, basically all of this is just to say that I want Major League Baseball back.
Yeah, we do, very much so. Yeah. The Yankees are going to win the World Series this year.
If there is one.
Yep.
Yankees versus Braves.
That's what I wanted. That's what I do.
Yeah.
We were, I'd be for it. Preview episode would have already been out.
Braves probably lose that one, but, you know, be worth it just to get back to the World Series. They're the only team in the National League East that has not won a pennant this decade or century, millennium, century. Whatever. They haven't won.
There
they're the only
a
team
season in this decade yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. All right. I need a drink. All right, that's all we've got for you on today's episode of Foul Ball Area. Thank you all for tuning in. Trey Lyle and Brady Hess. I'm Matthew Atkins. We'll see you next time.